Tony Trove, architect. How lovely to see you.
Lovely to see you, Alex. Yes. Thanks for inviting us on again. Yes.
It's certainly been part of my journey as an architect, yeah. Tragic. So
yes, yeah, it was better than tragic architecture, I suppose.
That is true. And you've got a really special guest this afternoon.
I was just talking to my guest today is Professor Gvork Hartounian, who's the Professor of Architectural History and Theory at UC. And we're just talking about his life outside it a little bit beforehand. And what's interesting about this little spot is probably the exotic nature of some of the people we've had on. And often people don't think they're exotic, but in fact...
You're very exotic.
Well, I'm not. You see, to yourself, you're not. But Gvork has had a very exotic life. And we're going to tease a little bit out of him from how he got here from his origins in Iran and, you know, got interested in design and ended up in Australia. So welcome, Gvork.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Professor Hartounian, so lovely to see you.
Same here.
And you're in beautiful architecture black, the black suit.
Well, that's, I don't know why, but even in America, when I was teaching at the University of Columbia University, all architects were dressed up black. I think we got that over there from Japanese.
Is that where it comes from?
80s, 90s, Japanese were all over American Ivy League universities, and the architects would come with this black, you know, greased almost hair and black dress up. So we got it from there. But if you would go at that time, Princeton University, which is outside of New York, no, they were colorful, everything. And I was shocked once I went there to see that they are not in black.
Because I was, you know, sadly went to both the memorial services for Aldo Jergler and for Alistair Swain, and looking out on the audience, you went, this is certainly an architecture crowd. The architecture black suits
architects are often very conservative in their dress. I don't know whether it's sort of just a bit like a uniform. You don't have to think too much. And
okay.
It's sort of easy stylish.
Academic are a little bit different than professional architects, I guess. Yeah. Because,
thanks for explaining the origins.
Well, you were actually, tell the story, Gvork, about when you're teaching and the idea of the black clothes and what the students said. You tell me a nice story about the...
Yes, I don't know how they make... students usually make some stories about their professors or instructors. So the story about me is that Gvork is in bad mood if he's dressed up black, but he's in good mood if he's in color. So...
They'll dive under the tables when he arrives.
You should play with their minds, Professor Hartounian.
I know.
And when you're in a really bad mood, come in color.
Even my partner, every time I look at my closet to pick up, and then she jokes that, okay, this black or that black?
It's like, what is it, the Eskimos have 500 words for white. We architects probably have the same number for black.
Now, Tony?
Yeah, well, I think we
you've chatted to Gvork.
The nice thing about this particular spot for me is I get a chance to talk to people that I've admired and done lovely things around Canberra for many years, but I don't really know them very well. So it's quite nice to lift the lid and have a look at how they got into design, and B, the exotic. Like, we had someone the other day, I think John Easthope, whose father was killed and was sunk by the Bismarck, and he fobbed it off as sort of wasn't very interesting. But I think everybody's story is interesting, particularly Gvork's, is, you know, your journey from, well, talk about perhaps your childhood in Iran, you know, and that's a sort of, you know, fascinating for most people, anyway, for me at least.
Yes, I was born in a village in 20 minutes drive from Tehran, the capital city of Iran, from basically farmer family, peasant family. Of course, my father died when I was maybe a couple of years old. I have never seen him. So I grew up with my mother and grandpa, who was a farmer. And my mother basically brought me up in an interesting way, insisting that the only way I can survive in future is to get educated. And that became a big drive for me, because in our family, there was nobody gone to university, not even to high school. So it just maybe that pushed me all the way up.
What a marvelous mother.
Well, actually, she applied some vigor to
her. Yeah, sometimes she would beat me in a good way, for example, in our...
Beat you in a good way.
Yeah, that why you didn't get HD and you got distinction. So it was like that kind
tough.
Of situation. I was a good student, but nevertheless...
Are you an only child, Kavok?
Yes. My mom had a couple of other kids, but they died also prematurely, apparently. And I survived. And it's very interesting. My mom was not religious. And, I am not, actually. But we were part of Christian Orthodox.
This is Armenian. So yeah, this is
Armenian,
sort of Orthodox church.
In Iran. And
did you grow up speaking Persian? Or?
Yeah. There's kind of... Armenians are pretty much... one of the interesting minorities in Iran, very much involved with the whole culture. I mean, if you go back to the Constitutional Revolution, one of the big figures was an Armenian guy. So we have been very close relation, and I didn't go to Armenian schools, which they were common for Armenians to go, but I could speak Farsi at home. Armenian with my mother and friends and families, but at school then everything was in Farsi.
So yeah, and do you still speak Farsi?
Yes, I do. Yeah. I do.
And Armenian?
And Armenian, but my Farsi is now better than Armenian because I don't speak to anybody, neither in Farsi nor Armenian.
Yeah, so probably if you went back home. You'd probably sound strange.
You'd have an Australian accent.
That's right. Armenian in an Australian accent.
Yeah. Design Capital and Tony Trobe, architect Tony Trobe, and architecture professor Gavork Hartounian, our special guest this afternoon.
Gavork, just on that business of you living in the countryside, being brought up in an agrarian type of lifestyle, but it seemed to me that you had a fascination for urban life, maybe from the outside looking in, I'm not quite sure, but sort of interesting to when you talk to me about, you know, observing cities, that you've always had a fascination. That's probably what drew you into the whole notion of design, is that? I mean, it was interesting when you were talking to me about this sort of city. I mean, and now that I think we're more urbanized than ever, more than 50% of the world live in cities, that you
sure.
brought up in the country.
Yeah. Now, the reason was that I grew up basically and lived most of my life in the agrarian setup, but both the school and high school and the university I attended, it was in Tehran, in the very, so to speak, cosmopolitan city for its time. So I had to travel every day to the city and then come back to agrarian. This conflict for me was always interesting. And as of today, I have this kind of obsession with cosmopolitan cities as such. You know.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Just to skip forward, but we'll go back in a minute, it was just your arrival in Canberra from, in Australia was the story. There's a link back to Aldo and the Parliament House from Philadelphia, and your reaction when somebody talked about you going to Australia.
Yes, we knew Aldo Jergelat from Philadelphia when I was in at University of Pennsylvania for my PhD degree in Philadelphia, and Aldo was a big famous architect there, won a couple of awards, everything, and. Then he became the head of architecture program at University of Columbia, Columbia University. And I had a good friend, Kenneth Frampton, a famous architectural historian. And one day he told me that, you know what, that old man was here, referring to Aldo, and he suggested that there is a good job at University of Sydney if Frampton has anybody to take that job. And Frampton told me, Gavork, you should take this job. To be honest with you now, I'm ashamed to say that I didn't know even where Australia is, where, let alone Sydney. But he told me that I wouldn't suggest you give work to Sydney. If Australia, if it was Melbourne, Sydney is a fascinating city. You should go there. But of course, he had already visited Sydney, Frampton, and had given talks. So, and it was great. When I arrived here, I knew already a couple of people, especially Richard Francis Jones from FJMT Architects, which was Frampton's student back at Columbia. And Frampton wrote him a letter that Georg is coming there, take care of it. So one day I received a call from Richard, which I didn't know who he is, that, okay, I'm coming to pick you up and show you around.
But Elder Jegler was one of the reasons you're here.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So we'll get
hate so mail. Many things
we'll
to thank
hate
him
mail
for.
From Melbourne now, but what was it about Sydney that you liked?
Oh, Sydney, I got fascinated with it for the landscape of Sydney.
It's a beautiful
and
city.
For me,
let's
it was like
it.
A dream to wake up every morning and see the Bay Area with all this traffic there. I grew up in Iran. It's like there isn't any kind of water surface in any place. So this was for me a reminder of modern Matisse or these people's painting. And that's the only time I had seen. But also when I arrived after finding a place to stay, I knew about Utzon as an architect and Opera House. So the first thing to do was to walk all the way down there to visit the real thing. I had never seen it. I had seen pictures and all these
And things. Were you thrilled when you walked towards it? I still thrill when I walk towards it.
Yeah, I was
it.
Very excited. I don't know why, but I'm always excited. It's discovering of buildings. Even when one day I was with a friend in Kentucky and we just bumped into one of Frank Lloyd Wright's buildings. I was so excited. It was like a discovery, you know. The Opera House was like that. And when I was telling to Tony this before, that when I was walking back, I met this couple and they asked me, where am I from? I said, I just arrived from America and I'm an architect. I just visited this masterpiece. And they said, well, Renzo Piano, do you know who he is? I said, of course. Oh, has a building there. So I walked toward Renzo Piano's building and enjoyed that one.
You can take yourself around the world, can't you, on an architecture tour. But perhaps that's what I'll do, Tony, in my retirement.
Yes, you'd be a real tragic
Just
then.
Follow the great and beautiful buildings.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, that you're interested in modernism. And, you know, a lot of people think of perhaps Iran as being mosques and sort of basically Islamic architecture. But you were making the point that, in fact, there's a big divide between the secular and the religious sort of worlds in terms of the way people see buildings in Iran?
Sure, because modern architecture is a universal phenomenon. And even in current situation of religious state, whatever, they try to make buildings in their style, so to speak, but never succeeded beyond building very ugly, huge mosques. The rest of the built environment, the high-rises, the apartments, everything is in modern style. So that shows that that kind of drive of modern architecture, which cannot be reduced to some kind of ideologies beyond some way of thinking that fits within the discourse of modernity.
Yeah. Actually, one of the things you did talk about, which I thought was interesting, was about the nature of education. Given you're an educator now and a lot of things sort of done online in lecture halls, et cetera, was the lack of sort of books and the visceral nature of the education. You talked about walking through the bazaar. Maybe you could say a little bit about that sort of very sort of dirt-orientated education.
Yes. The education, of course, there was no book. The teaching was more they would give us a lecture, we would take notes. But one of the good parts of it, I have to say that, was that they would take us to the traditional cities like Kashan. We had this instructor who was educated in Italy at that time. And he would tell us that if you want to know a city, you stop and watch people's pace. How fast or slow they walk, that gives you a sense of what kind of city you are experiencing.
That's very interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah. And so we would, and he would say, let's buy this particular Iranian bread. They call it sangak. It's a huge, long bread. So we would hold this bread in group of 10, 20. We would eat the bread and walk in the bazaar, which was very fascinating as a, one of the basic morphologies of the old Iranian cities. And there was, of course, dirt and the smell of it. Those things I have never forgotten. Mm. Even when we would go to mosque and the water and then the aspects of the mosque covered the surfaces with mirror and the colorful tiles, these things still I recall it.
Yeah, so even though you're really probably certainly interested in modernism, a modernist, you have this other sort of spiritual side that you sort of like. I was trying to tease out this business of the different skins and you know, and that the actual, what's the word, phenomenology? It's a big long word. I don't know. That's probably a bit technical. But there was just more the. It's not just a machine for living in. There's some other overlays that you.
Yeah, there were overlays, but not metaphysical. It was like in Iranian mosque, especially the layers of the cladding, so to speak, the layers of tiles and even the letters and words from Quran, which is carved out of those. Those are very fascinating for me, coming from a Christian background. Mm. Of course, Christian churches are beautiful, but they are not exotic as mosques were for me. So. Mm. I was fascinated with that ambience.
Tony Trobe and Gavork Hartounian are my guests this afternoon in Design Capital. It's 6 to 2. Professor Hartounian, what is the essence of your philosopher as a teacher, as a professor of architecture to your students? Can you distill it down?
Well, it's a very difficult question, but it's a good one to ask. I'm coming from a little bit of Marxist background because we were all, as part of Iranian students abroad, we were all politically motivated, particularly against Shah at that time, I should say. And therefore, and it was hot season when I was in Philadelphia for Maoism. Even like Michel Foucault was Maoist. Mm. Then Jean-Luc Godard, the French film director, was Maoist. It was like fashion to be Maoist at that time. So we were Maoist in a way.
Black-dressed Maoist, yeah.
No. At that time, we would have a different kind of dress. This was not the dress. At far you go, you would have Mao's jacket. Do you remember how it was? So that was part of the beginning. But later on, I got through my education at PhD level, I got to know historians like Manfredo Tafuri, Italian, who was also a member of the Italian Communist Party. So we got fascinated with his analysis, the ideological take on modern architecture and architecture in general. And then I came from that to Walter Benjamin, Jewish Marxist rabbi, that's what they called him, because he had this dual approach to everything, part of it with beautiful mysticism of Judaism and part of it from Marxism. So that became for me very appealing. Mm. And I actually edited a book about Walter Benjamin and architecture because a couple of his articles, particularly one called Art in the Age of Mechanical Reproduction, it became like a Bible in American Ivy League schools. All of us, we would read, along with Heidegger's discourse on technology and dwelling and all these things.
And as opposed to just cut to the chase, how does that kind of background and experience then manifest itself now in you as a teacher?
Yes, of course, because the manifesto is part of the discourse of historical avant-garde of art and architecture in Europe. And later on, of course, after war, a little bit in Italy and then America, and that was the end of it. So when I was asked that we should introduce two units about research in architecture for Masters of Architecture program at UC. I came with this proposition that I teach manifesto. Okay. So the whole unit is about, I give seven lectures about manifestos of avant-gardism in art and architecture, basically from Eurofuturism, Dada, all these people.
Oh, how fantastic.
Surrealism.
We're doing it in the Canberra. I'm running, Walk's got the students to be in contact with me, so I'm running little pieces in the Canberra Times on these manifestos.
What a great education the students are getting.
Yeah, okay. It's very exciting for me to see that.
It's very interesting about the sort of this sort of missing part often with practicing architects is that you don't dip back into the sort of the philosophical and the sort of theoretical, which is really fascinating when you talk to someone like Professor Artunian. For me anyway, particularly, that you sort of feel that sometimes you're a little bit on a, you know, on a conveyor belt and not enough time's given to
And the students love it, Gavork?
The students love it, actually, because after those lectures, I ask students to pick up one contemporary architecture and write a manifesto, to study the work and write a manifesto, but of course in the style of manifesto. Mm. The language has to be vibrant, sometimes aggressive, challenging, with some collage and montage of images of their choice. Mm. So that's almost four pages of drawing and text, which some of them is now in Sydney building on display, which is, we opened it last night. And then they write a paper about that subject. They are very excited to do that because, as they told me, I have been able to introduce architectural history, particularly the modern part of it, in a very different context to them, yeah, beyond the typical teaching that, right, who was this guy. So they enjoy
a great big education, those lucky students.
Yeah, well, just, your whole life trajectory, I mean, you had the revolution in Iran sort of interrupted that, and it would have been interesting. Mm. You would have, as you said, probably gone back and taught in Iran, so sliding doors.
It is lovely. Thank you so much. Too short a time, Gavork, but just delightful to have you on the program. And Tony, thank you so much, as
pleasure,
always, for organising fantastic guests. Gavork Artunian and Tony Trobe. It is News.